Welcome to Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group and Trading Technologies. For more information on the show, visit us online at futuresradioshow.com. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudelli.
Hello, and welcome to episode 92 of Futures Radio Show. Today, we had an incredibly knowledgeable guest when it comes to the oil markets, especially when it comes to tracking oil across the globe. He's the Director of Commodity Research at Clipper Data, Matt Smith. Since I am primarily a technical trader when it comes to oil, after speaking with Matt today, I was reminded how important fundamentals are when it comes to the price of oil, especially to the major oil players. Instead of waiting for the weekly inventory numbers, they are live tracking the flow of oil on a day-by-day basis. He reveals the incredible technology that Clipper Data is using to help traders. I asked Matt why there seems to be so many discrepancies lately between the EIA and API numbers. And I also asked Matt what he thought would happen to the crude oil market if we did see a cut in production at the next OPEC meeting. Matt was a wealth of information for any oil trader out there. If you're wanting to trade oil like a professional, you need to hear what Matt has to say. Thank you all for listening. Please enjoy this episode. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Anthony.
Matt, it's great to have you on the show. I'm so glad you're here. Now, you are a first-time guest, so I'd like to start off by asking you to please give us your backstory. Can you tell us how you got started in the industry and eventually became the Director of Commodity Research at Clipper Data?
Sure. Well, I kind of stumbled into energy, to be honest, Anthony. I studied English at university because I didn't know what else I wanted to do, but I knew that I enjoyed reading literature. Then after that, for my sins, I did sort of my penance, essentially, and got into banking and spent my 20s getting my qualifications in terms of being a financial analyst. And then that culminated in me becoming a portfolio manager. And so I was running a book of about 55 million. And then I basically left London and moved to the U.S., and I couldn't really find anything when I first got here, and so I got a job at an energy company and started doing a bit of technical analysis for them because I'd always sort of like had a desire to do that, and then really it's just kind of snowballed from there, blogging, getting media attention and stuff like that, and then finally now I'm at Clipper Data.
I can't tell you how many traders we spoke to on this show that started off in a different field. Once they got one whiff of the markets, they couldn't look back.
Yeah, it's totally true. And I can't imagine myself being in any other industry at all. I don't want to, you know, there's enough going on here to keep you sort of perpetually interested.
Believe me, I don't either. I love it. Now, you and I were on a call the other day, and you started to explain to me how physical crude flows give unique insights into the market. Can you please explain to us what you meant by that? And can you tell us how traders could use that information?
Sure, yeah. So Clipper Data essentially is tracking all barrels of oil on a global basis across the globe waterborne. And we're doing that for refined products as well. And so we're doing that via the combination of a number of methods. So we're doing satellite tracking. We're also using port agent bills. And so we're seeing the bills of lading in terms of imports and exports. And then we're combining that as well with Bayesian modeling, which essentially then is basing previous cargoes journeys to the current one. And so we're tracking these vessels from the dock of each port in every country of every region, traveling to every region of every country, of every port, of every dock. And so we can tell that, say, for example, once a VLCC, a very large crude carrier, goes around the Cape of Good Hope, we have a certain probability assigned to that, where we believe it is going. And then once it gets, say, 15 miles off there, we can say, boom, with certainty, yes, it is going to that dock with this amount of crude on it and this grade. So we're basically providing this level of granularity that no one else can do. We know that cargo. And so that's what traders pay us for. And so our clients are hedge funds, producers, refiners, all those people that need that competitive advantage of knowing what is going on with the physical flows.
So basically, you guys are real-time supply and demand.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah. So it's traditionally been something that is very opaque, and we're essentially making that transparent. And so it really is a huge competitive advantage.
From a trader's perspective, lately we've been watching the API and the EIA numbers having a major discrepancy. Can you shed some light on this and maybe explain to us why that's been happening?
Yeah, it's fair to say that they do vary more often than not. The number's like a month or two old, but I think it's like they vary by an average of like 2 million barrels, something like that, over the last sort of year and a half. Essentially, they both are voluntary samples, but it just seems that the samples that the EIA get are relatively more complete, let's say. That said, what we do is we're tracking those import cargoes that are coming in to the US each week, and we are using that number in combination with our production model and our estimates for refinery runs, all the different elements of supply and demand, to project what that inventory number will be. And what's amazing, over the sort of last year and a bit since I've joined Clipper Data, I've become that much more skeptical on the market, essentially because when you have the level of granularity that we have access to here, you can then be dismissive of cases that are out there in the broader media. And even to the point of the EIA, unfortunately, for example, in terms of their samples, say for pad 5 on the West Coast there, we're actually tracking the import bills. And so we can look at those and see that how many vessels have actually arrived with what volume of what grade. And sometimes those numbers just don't add up. And so I'm definitely a lot more skeptical now. At the same time, we track, say, floating storage on a global basis. So we're watching Singapore, we're watching Qingdao and China, we're watching the Middle East. And so a story came out just last week saying how there was a glut of crude in the North Sea waiting there. And we looked at the numbers and it really wasn't true. And so the insights that we have now are really kind of cool, but also make you that much more skeptical.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the U.S. market. You said to me that there were some strange dynamics of the U.S. market. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, sure. It's just really from the perspective that we are importing crude, we're exporting crude, the same for the products as well. So in terms of imports, we're still bringing in sort of 5 million barrels a day in terms of waterborne crude to the US, so 3 million barrels a day by pipeline from Canada. But we're also exporting as well. So the export ban was lifted at the end of last year. And sort of the law of unintended consequences, whereas we were sending crude up to Canada on a waiver, essentially, prior to the lifting of the ban, once the ban was lifted, boom, the volumes to Canada actually dropped off once you sort of had all the red tape cut away. And that happened for a number of reasons. One, because the WTI and Brent benchmarks became more in line. The US became more intertwined with the global market. And so Canada was then importing more from the Atlantic Basin, and sort of specifically from West Africa there. But what we've seen in terms of US exports, we've been seeing sort of smaller volumes. And by smaller volumes, I mean sort of 400,000, 750,000 barrels, something like that, on a Suezmax, then that's the type of ship, going across to Italy, to France, to Netherlands, carrying crude and condensate. But what you've seen is this kind of evolution of the market there in terms of exports as it's kind of finding its way. And so even just in the last couple of weeks, Anthony, we've seen this interesting dynamic now where you're seeing VLCCs, so these very large crude carriers that have 2 million barrels on them, they're sort of bundling up sort of these smaller parcels of US crude and now sort of looking to go to Asia. And so it's just the changing dynamics, the evolution of the export is going on there. All the while, we're still importing 5 million barrels a day of crude, sort of 2.8 million barrels from OPEC, nearly sort of 1 million barrels a day from Saudi Arabia. And so It's just amazing to me the amount that is on water and those global flows on a daily basis. And we see that too in terms of the products. And so you have the East Coast who is importing gasoline. And so sort of half of that, something like that, is coming across from Europe. And then we export gasoline from the Gulf Coast. And we're sending that predominantly to Latin America. And so, but we're not sending the Gulf Coast gasoline up to the East Coast because of Jones Act vessels cost more, etc. And so the economics of the situation means we export to Latin America and we import from Europe. And we have a similar situation with distillates in that diesel gets exported to Latin America. And so now that the export ban has been lifted for crude, it's always been sort of like free trade for the products. We have the U.S. very much ingrained in the global market now. So,
in a previous call, you said to me that we are chasing the horizon regarding rebalancing. You touched base a little bit right now in regard to supply and demand. Is there anything else you'd like to add in regard to supply and demand, and where do you see us going from here?
In terms of the stocks, if you look at oil stocks in terms of days of supply, it is starting to normalize now, and it should continue to do so. We've sort of dropped below 500 million barrels in terms of inventories here in the US now. That's the first time since January. We're seeing refinery runs over the last 8 weeks higher than they have been for year ago levels. So we are using up that crude. The concern is still that on the gasoline stocks in terms of days of supply covered is still elevated, and so we are still relatively awash with the products. That's from the domestic perspective. From a global perspective, is fairly similar too, in that we have had this massive oversupply for a couple of years now, and that is sort of coming closer to balance, but we still have increasing exports, say, from the likes of China, record product exports, and then we have really strong crude inventories on a global basis, really strong product inventories on a global basis. So even once we are back to some sort of semblance of balance, there is still this sort of huge supply cushion from these inventories. I think a lot is going to depend on what we see from OPEC. At the end of next month, you know, sort of 7 weeks ago, as of now, 7 weeks time, sorry, as of now. And so, but it's interesting, just taking us back to the data that we look at. So it's been fascinating to watch the crude loadings from these various OPEC members. So from the likes of Iran, they really did ramp up very quickly. And so they're up to sort of just over 2.5 million barrels a day in terms of those loadings. But you really have seen them level off in the last few months. And so it appears that they can't actually increase their production that much more. They've kind of hit a stumbling block there. All the while, we have Saudi Arabia saying they're wanting to try and you know, stabilize prices, etc., and we still see their loadings being really, really strong, so much higher than they were sort of November 14 when this market share battle started. Elsewhere, I guess sort of Iraq is super interesting in that they continue to push their limits. We only track the waterborne crude, but that comes out of Basra, the Persian Gulf there. But that's up over 3 million barrels a day and has been for a while. And that's going to continue to incrementally increase. They got their new minister come in just a couple of months ago. And the first thing he did was go to the foreign oil companies in Iraq and say, I need you guys to ramp up your output. So he went to the BPs, your Lukoils, Shells, etc., and said, because we need more revenues, increase your output. And so we're going to see more supply coming to market from Iraq. And so from that perspective, it's very difficult to see how OPEC is going to reach some sort of agreement at the end of next month. Because A, their rhetoric, and B, their actions are two very different things. And also just these guys are not really willing to compromise except perhaps the Saudi Arabia. So if we are going to get some sort of production cut, they're going to be the ones that are going to have to do the heavy lifting on that.
Can you give us a little insight as to what you think will happen in the crude market if we do get that production cut?
It would be amazing if we did. Because even if they do agree and they set their quotas and everything, we're then going to have to see if they actually implement those. And that's where we're going to be in excellent position here at Clipper Data, because we're going to actually be able to watch those loadings and being like, hang on a minute, guys, you said you were going to do this and you're not. I just can't see how practically and politically they're going to actually implement this. But all the while, though, the market is likely to come back into balance. It's just we see that happening sort of more on the horizon, and so that's going to be a longer-term process. You have to as well look at sort of non-OPEC production as well. So we have a production model for US crude, and we're seeing that those decline rates are slowing. We've seen crude bottoming out in terms of production for this year. We think the EIA is underestimating their production. That's why they always have that positive adjustment in every single weekly report, bar a few. It seems as if the more the prices kind of get around this $50 level, and we're not really going to drop far below this over the next 7 weeks because we don't know what's going to happen in November. And so all the while it's letting these US producers hedge out their production next year at sort of $52-$53 a barrel. They're happy, they hunker down, they can keep on going. And so really we just keep, not only does OPEC keep kicking the can, but we keep kicking the can for the rebalancing of the market, too.
Great insight today, Matt. Thank you for sharing with us. Now we're going to move on to our rapid fire segment. So if you're ready, what's your favorite book about trading or the markets?
The Frackers by a guy called Greg Zuckerman. And it's this excellent kind of backdrop about what has happened in sort of the shale revolution in the US. And it's great how he does it, because he does different bits. Like he talks about Cheniere energy and LNG exports, and about Pioneer Natural Resources, and he talks about Harold Hamm, and he talks about Aubrey McClendon, and then they're all sort of interweaved, and it's just a really good read.
Oh, I should check that book out. Now, what is your favorite movie or TV show about trading or the markets?
Trading Places, which is, you know, there's only like two different ways you can go here. You go that way, you go The Big Short, right?
On this show, those are definitely the one and two answers. But after all the years I've been doing this, I'm so surprised that we don't have anybody. Actually, we've had one person say Wall Street, and that was really by far one of my favorite movies growing up.
Yeah, that is kind of strange. People don't go for that.
What's the best piece of advice you've received about trading or the markets?
Oh, you've got to go to Maynard Keynes with just the market can stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent.
Yeah, I've learned that one the hard way. If you could give a piece of advice to the young people interested in getting involved in trading or the markets, what would it be?
It would be to look at all different aspects of the market. Like, I know with you, Anthony, you're a technical analysis guru, you're into that side of things. I think you have to look at the technical analysis. I think you have to look at the fundamentals as well. You basically take all these different elements of analysis and sort of use them like a utility belt, like Batman has. And so you just have all these tools, and you have to keep skeptical, but also be flexible enough to be able to change your opinion on the market.
Great advice. Now, Matt, I know you're a busy guy. Before I let you go, is there anything else you'd like to add to today's show?
No, that was it. Just thank you very much for having me on.
Where can people find you on Twitter?
MattVSmith01 and at ClipperData.
All right, everybody. I highly suggest you follow Matt on Twitter. He puts out a ton of great content and is just an all-around great guy. Matt, once again, thank you very much for coming on the show, and I look forward to having you back on the show again in the future.
Sounds good. Thanks, Anthony.
Thanks for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you enjoyed the show, please rate us and leave a review on iTunes. For previous episodes or to discuss and comment about the show with myself or my guests, please visit us at futuresradioshow.com. Don't forget to become a premium member today for free by signing up to our email list.